Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where pod is spelled with an A and a W and an E, I guess, because you got to put it in the past tense. We are just over 1 week away from the first game of the NFL season. It feels kind of tense right now. This preseason has not been kind to everyone. People want it to end. I do not want it to end because I have had an extremely fun time calling these Rams games, even though it has led to me being dragged by my hero, Russell Carrington Wilson. Here to join me is somebody who joined in on the dragging. In fact, you could argue who made the dragging worse. My old friend, an occasional pod partner, that's pod with a P-O-D, Bill Barnwell.
Mina, you know, I just want to go back in time a little bit. I want to go back to, like, 2013 Mina Kimes and be like, hey, Mina,
really?
So this is what's going on right now. Number one, you are the color commentator for the Los Angeles Rams, which were not even a team at that point. Number two, this is you wearing a Rams polo. And I want to see 2013 Mina Kimes try to unpack the steps that have happened to get to the point where you're wearing a Rams polo and being dragged on Twitter by Russell Wilson.
I think the Rams not being a team in Los Angeles probably would have made it somewhat unbelievable back then. But, the Rams polo or the Rams Hawaiian shirt, I'm not sure which would have been worse.
Is the Hawaiian shirt?
My Hawaiian shirt?
No, I saw the Hawaiian shirt, but is it Rams branded?
Yeah, it has a little Rams logo. Oh, well, Wilson responded to me by saying, I could be forgiven with an Etch-a-Sketch, and I was trying to decide what image to Etch-a-Sketch of him, and I am torn between the iconic Hawaiian shirt photo of Russell Wilson before he started dressing cool, speaking of, like, the old you versus the new you, or a Etch-a-Sketch of Wilson audibling out of a run while a disappointed Ryan Schottenheimer looks on. So, listeners, you can advise me. That second one has a lot more detail. It might be kind of challenging. We are not talking about the Seahawks today. We are not talking about the Rams today. We will talk about a few teams that are, shall we say, less competitive than the Seahawks and Rams. Bill had a great column that came out last week about the teams who have the lowest chances, according to FPI, of making it back to the playoffs. And I want to talk about a few of them and sort of what fans of those teams should be looking for, interested in, including one that's sort of in the news today with the Clowney news. It's not the Houston Texans. It is the Miami Dolphins. But before we get to that, we are going to talk, of course, about Andrew Luck, really not only the biggest story of the week, but the biggest NFL offseason story in a really long time. So we're going to get to that. But first, I want to tell you about a new podcast we've got at ESPN. So college football celebrating its 150th anniversary. We have a podcast that takes you back to some of the most iconic moments in the sport, such as Jimmy Johnson transforming college football with style, the fall of USC, how Michael Vick electrified on the field, and many other stories you can check out on the Down and Distance podcast, hosted by Ivan Mizell. Okay, Bill, so let's start the Andrew Luck discussion. I want to talk about Andrew Luck. I want to talk about Jacoby Brissett. I want to talk about the Colts. I want to talk about it all. But first, I want to ask you where you were when you got the news and what your reaction was.
That's what I was going to ask you. That was my first question. I was going to ask, where were you? You were doing the Rams game, but how did you hear about it?
So it was not during a commercial break. Andrew Siciliano, who does play-by-play, you could see him kind of like recoil at something. He turned towards myself and Nate Burleson. First, he put up a hand to his mouth, indicating, do not react, with a curse word. And then he showed us Schefter's tweet on the phone. I think, like most people, I assumed it was a darn Schefter.
Sure. Which is fine. That's a great a darn Schefter tweet. it's so unbelievable that you're like, okay, well, at least this is not something that would confuse me, that it might be even close to a real tweet that Adarn right. Schefter is tweeting. Did you curse, even though you were warned?
Classic Adarn. No, but I wish there was a camera on me, because I'm sure I made the most clownish reaction. Because when you can't say anything, your eyes just bug out. And then I looked down the field, and you could see the Rams. We're behind the Rams. We could see the players finding out, like Clay Matthews passing around his phone, and you could see people reacting in real time. So obviously I was shocked. Bill, there was a comment from Chris Ballard, like, I want to say 2 weeks ago. It did make me think Luck was going to retire, but it made me think his injury, the phantom leg, or not phantom, the mysterious leg injury that kept moving around, was worse than maybe it seemed. He said something about, hey, this isn't like, and this is relevant to our discussion today, Ballard said, this isn't like it was in 2017. We're not as dependent on one player anymore. And I remember I saw that and I thought, why would you say that, Chris Ballard? And it got me, I guess, a little bit shook.
Yeah, I think absolutely. It seems like we've had sort of multiple timelines here. You have some people saying that basically the Colts just figured this out in the past few days. Luck was had a couple of weeks where he was talking about it. Other people have said it, they must have known for months. And I think that there's a sort of, I think this happens more frequently than people might think. Maybe not with your super top, you know, quarterbacks and guys at the highest level, but I think you have players who sit there and say, I'm thinking about retiring. I don't know if I'm coming back. I think Rob Gronkowski is a pretty good example of that in recent years, where I think organizations sort of are prepared for the possibility, but don't think it's actually going to happen. And I think this is a case where the Colts were at least, you know, privately, and in some cases, I think with that Ballard quote, publicly preparing for that possibility. But I don't think they thought it was actually going to happen until very, very recently.
Right. A Colts team that, by all accounts, has refused to trade Jacoby Brissett, which suggests that, you know, the backup quarterback had elevated importance to them, maybe relative to other teams. Mm-hmm. I think the timing of it is interesting because, you know, obviously, like you said, we don't know what the Colts knew, when they know, but I think it was the reason why, well, there was a lot of other reasons why idiots were criticizing Andrew Luck for walking away. But the timing, I think, was something that came up. Well, you know, why did he wait so long? And I guess, you know, before we get to the football aspects of this.
Can I tell you my story of how I found out?
Of how you found out the news.
Yes. So I had a fantasy football draft that afternoon with a bunch of friends. So I had people come in from, like, Minneapolis and other parts of D.C. I live in D.C. now. And, you know, like, people coming from around where we had a draft. And afterwards, we went out to a restaurant. We were waiting for our table. And ESPN had, like, they had the Miami-Florida game on. Miami-Florida. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like, there's, like, a breaking news ticker that, like, flashes on ESPN. They flashed, like, the most emergency of all emergencies, bright red breaking news, like, graphic on the screen. And I'm like, oh, you know, like, I don't think this is for Lamar Miller's ACL. Like, but then when the Andrew Luck news came across, I screamed. Like, people at the
bar. You screamed?
People at the bar stared. like, what is happening? I was like, well, guys, it's been great. I think we were like 10 minutes away from probably getting our table. And I was like, well, I will not be joining you for the remainder of dinner. I have to go home and probably write till about 3 a.m, which is, in fact, exactly what happened.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Now I'm envisioning, you know how when you get like an alert on your phone of like a stolen vehicle in the area?
It was like the Andrew Luck
because I didn't wasn't watching TV. It must have been weird to watch the Rams game, and we got the news. We did acknowledge it and talked about it a little bit, and then I was like, "Well, the roster battle for backup linebacker rages on today." It was interesting to watch all the reactions come in. I think to see former players and current players be pretty much, almost universally supportive of him and his decision. And from my end, you know, I thought a little bit about Vontae Davis, which was this. When was that last year?
Week one or week two. I think it was week one because they got blown out in week one.
So their situations aren't comparable. It was during the game, obviously, sure. And that brings its own set of issues. But ultimately, I kind of came down on that the same way I feel about the Luck news in terms of, well, how do we feel about the timing and whatever of his decision, which is people always ask me, you know, you cover such a violent, brutal, aggressive sport, and how do you morally reconcile that? And I think it's a complicated question. But one thing I draw from that is because it's so violent, because it's so physical, and because the injuries are so, just so, so dramatic and painful, and especially what Luck went through, I don't feel ever comfortable casting judgment on players' decisions about their bodies. I don't care when it comes. I don't care how it happens. I just do not feel like it's my place to judge a football player making a decision based on pain, right?
Yeah.
So that's just how I feel about Luck, and I don't know. It's kind of like start and finish for me there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the timing of it, you know, it's not like it's strange. I mean, it makes sense that he tried to rehab this injury. I think clearly, you know, reading the tea leaves both in the moment and then going back and looking at it after the fact. I mean, this was an injury that was supposed to be healed months ago. It wasn't even like he had this during, you know, during the training camp. He had it months earlier, and it was a calf injury that should go away, and it didn't. It lingered and lingered. It became an ankle injury, which that doesn't happen. You don't have GMs coming out and saying, well, this guy had a calf injury and now we think it's an ankle injury. We can't really figure out what it is. I mean, that doesn't happen. You know, I think it's one thing if it's, you sit there and say, okay, well, this person had a broken bone and they rehabbed the broken bone and they were healthy and they said, ah, this isn't for me. I mean, Andrew Luck clearly was not right. He was still in pain. He was still struggling with an unknown issue that was, had bothered him for months. And with the shoulder injury that he had previously, I mean, he played through pain in 2015 and 2016. He made that decision for himself. And I think he was, you know, very tough and deserves a lot of credit for doing that for his team, especially with a team that was not really going very far. But I think furthermore, once he had the surgery, the Colts all said, hey, he's going to be ready for training camp. And then he wasn't. And he wasn't close to being ready for training camp, and he didn't, ended up playing or missing the entire season. So I think it's not only just about making a decision about your body and sort of not saying, I don't want to deal with this pain or this process, but just that sense of uncertainty, that of not knowing, you know, what the time frame is, why your body's not responding the way that you're expecting it to twice in 3 years or 4 years. You can imagine how scary that is.
Yeah, I can't quite fathom having played through as much pain as he did in 2015 and 2016. I mean, you've heard the stories about peeing blood and his kidney. I mean, they're gruesome, right? So having done that and then looking towards the future where you might be going down that path again, right? It must be just so psychologically debilitating. The other thing about the timing, Bill, by the way, is I'm not sure what else the Colts would have done differently. Mm-hmm. Honestly, like, let's say it was, I don't know, the beginning of the spring or something. I mean, thinking through the quarterback position and the guys who were out there, I guess Nick Foles would have been an option, potentially. I guess. Like, I don't feel like he's that massive of an upgrade over Jacoby Brissett, quite frankly, especially kind of given where this team is at. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It just doesn't. You know, if you want to go down that path of thinking through, okay, well, would they have spent allocated money differently? They still have like a crap ton of cap space, which we'll get to talking about next year. It doesn't seem to me like things would be very different.
Yeah. And I think about, you know, what Steve Berline said, who, you know, was an ex-player, someone who went through a bunch of surgeries, who, you know, I would take his opinion seriously. And I am taking his opinion seriously in this context. And he said, you know, I respect Andrew Luck, but why didn't he just go on IR and sort of figure it out after the season? And when I think about that, the idea that Andrew Luck would have gone on IR this weekend and we would have seen reports of, oh, we don't know if he's going to play again. He's not sure about his future. If he went on IR and then retired in January, I think that would be so much worse. That would hang over this entire season. They wouldn't have been able to move forward. They would be thinking about, you know, how do we handle Jacoby Brissett's future when he's a free agent after the year? What do we do about Andrew? Are we scouting quarterbacks this year, thinking we might have to draft somebody? Do we not do that? Are we scouting other, you know, pro quarterbacks we might want to pick up in free agency or possibly trade for next offseason? I mean, there's just a lot of uncertainty there. And I think for whatever you want to say about Andrew Luck, and I think obviously they would probably rather have known, given all other things being equal, I don't think much would have changed to your point, but I think you would have rather known earlier, but I just don't, you know, I think that having some level of certainty where Andrew Luck is saying, no, I'm good and don't count on me coming back. I think that's better than having him say, I don't know how I feel about the future. I'm half retired. I don't think that really would have been any better.
Yeah, it couldn't have been easy for him too, Bill, thinking about this team and how good they are compared to some of the, I mean, it's impossible to talk about his injury without talking about the teams he played for. And it feels dramatic to call it a, you know, miscarriage of justice, right? Or anything like that. The offensive lines he played behind, the lack of investment, Ryan Grigson spending money on the defense when he shouldn't have, the bad drafts, the lack of draft capital spent on offensive line, which is funny, right? Because they always talk about that with Russell Wilson, whose career has kind of been intertwined or yoked together with Luck, at least by Seahawks Twitter. But really, Luck got screwed a lot early in his career. And now you're looking at 2019 and it's the best offensive line by far and away he's ever played with, arguably one of the best in the NFL. And, you know, he's got a great coach, a head coach who seems wonderful, and he's walking away from that. But that's what Jacoby Brissett gets to play in now. And Frank Reich, that coach, did come out today and he said, you know, I think he's one of the top 20 quarterbacks, which I love, by the way, because it's such a realistic assessment, right? He didn't say, you know what I mean? I kind of love that he put it at top 20. But it is a good situation. It's obviously very, very different from the team that Jacoby Brissett played for in 2017.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I want to ask you about, which is, how do you feel about this offense and Brissett's prospects in it? And, you know, we did see him play in the 20. He has a lot of starts under his belt. Mm-hmm. How do you regard those starts now, looking forward?
I don't put a ton of stock in how he played in 2017, good or bad, because think about what happened with him. I mean, he was basically about to be cut by the Patriots. He gets traded to the Colts for Philip Dorsett, basically a trade of two guys who are about to get cut. And 8 days later, he's playing regular season snaps for the Indianapolis Colts at quarterback. Like, I mean, just fundamentally, he doesn't know the other players on his team at that point. Yeah. He barely knows the playbook. Even if he's incredibly studious, which I'm sure he is, like, there's just, you can't learn things that quickly. There's the Sam Bradford example from a few years ago, but that wasn't a full playbook. That was really just, I think that was a longer period of time between him, showing up with the Vikings and then actually playing as well. You just can't do that to a quarterback and expect anything meaningful in terms of results. And, over the course of that season, of course, he took a ton of sacks. I think the offensive line was a disaster. I don't think the scheme helped. And I think some of that is Jacoby Brissett as well, given that when he played with the Patriots, that year that Tom Brady was suspended, he had a pretty bad sack rate, much worse than either Tom Brady or Jimmy Garoppolo. So I think, you know, I think when Frank looked at this offense, he made a good point, which is, you know, I came in for Jim Kelly when the Bills were running the K-gun offense in the early 90s, and people kind of thought, oh, we're going to have to totally change this offense, and that's not what we did. We certainly made some changes. I'm not as good as Jim Kelly. I have to do some things differently, but it was still the same concepts. It was still the same core. And I think with Jacoby Brissett playing under Frank Reich, who I think is a very good offensive mind and a very good coach, having had a full year to digest that scheme, and I think most importantly for me, he's not being thrown into the fire with no warning. I mean, obviously they weren't expecting Andrew Luck to retire, but I think for a while now, this team has expected Andrew Luck to not suit up for the first week or two at the very least of the regular season. So Brissett's been playing with the ones. Frank Reich has been thinking about what that scheme is going to look like with Jacoby Brissett at quarterback. And now, instead of having it be a short-term thing, it's going to be for the entirety, it looks like, of the 2019 season. So I think they're better prepared, and Jacoby Brissett is better prepared and has a better opportunity to succeed than he ever would have had in 2017.
Completely. I agree. And I think it's a really good point you made about, you know, him being responsible for some of those sacks, because I thought back to his 2017 season and I thought, you know, he has a good arm. He has decent mobility. He can read the field, but he does take too many sacks. He holds onto the ball a little bit too long. And it's funny. I don't know if you've been following that Pro Football Focus quarterbacks being responsible for their sacks and trying to establish controls for that. And he is a good example of that. And you do look at the Patriots games and you can sort of see that. But that said, even if certain quarterbacks are more responsible for their sacks, every quarterback plays better when he's not under pressure, right? And this offensive line is ridiculous, okay? So I think even if Jacoby Brissett it does hold the ball too long, it's still going to make a massive, massive difference. And I also think, you know, like you said, the most important factor in all this is Frank Reich. Mm-hmm. We've seen him do this before. He did it in Philadelphia. He completely, you know, he changed that offense for Nick Foles, who was not good before. Jacoby Brissett, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'm guessing Jacoby Brissett 2017 season statistically was somewhat comparable to some of those recent Nick Foles years before he went under, before Frank Reich got a hold of him. So I have maybe an excessive amount of faith, but I have a lot of faith in Reich's ability to, you know, as you mentioned, he's probably already been thinking about this, but to redesign the offense around him. He's just a very good coordinator. Everyone's played better under him. The running backs look better. Guys are open. I'm excited to see what he does with Paris Campbell. Mm-hmm. His third down conversion rates or Lux and went way, way up. And by the way, that went down in Philadelphia after he left. So I think because of the Reich factor and because of the offensive line, this is going to be a better offense. Now, that said, I'm not in love with this Colts defense. Mm-hmm. So I think it's totally fair to downgrade them from being the division favorites. Just because of that uncertainty, even though I think Jacoby Brissett is a great option, and I think they will probably be better situated than people think, certainly better than 2017. I think it's fair, Bill, to say they're no longer the division favorites.
Oh, for sure. I mean, they in Vegas, the odds went down. And I think one of the Jacoby Brissett things is that it's not just replacing Andrew Luck with Jacoby Brissett, it's the possibility of if your starting quarterback gets hurt, instead of turning to Jacoby Brissett, who's probably a top five, top six backup, now you're turning to Chad Kelly, who his most notable thing is having a SoundCloud song about him where he says swag 18 times in 30 seconds. And Philip Walker, who I've never heard
of before.
It's Swag Kelly, by the way.
I was going to wait to correct you later.
That is the color commentator who spoke to Chad Kelly before the game. please call me Swag on TV. That's totally fair. But I think actually in listening to your show with Dominique Foxworth, our mutual friend a few weeks ago, talking about the AFC South before all this happened, he brought up the point about this Colts defense, which is they're running a Tampa 2 scheme that was basically left for dead by the NFL. I mean, teams do it for a few snaps here or there, but it was a really important part of what the Colts did on defense last year. And so I think, you know, is there a chance that Matt Eberflus is a very good defensive coordinator and they run back that same scheme and it works? Sure. But I think, you know, with a full offseason to prepare for stuff, you know, I think there's been plenty of Tampa 2 beaters that we've seen around the NFL that were able to sort of force teams to get out of that as their base coverage. And I think if you have great athletes, I think if you have a scheme, like, for example, to bring up the Seattle Seahawks, I mean, their scheme, I think it was always too simplistic to say that they were running the same cover three scheme every single play, but they had this sort of core players where if they wanted to run that more frequently than anybody else in the league, they were so good that they could get away with that. And with the Colts, I don't know that they have the talent on defense. They have a ton of young players, and then it's not crazy to think those guys could take a leap forward, but I don't know that they have the pass rush, especially if Jabal Sheard is not healthy to start the season. I don't know if their secondary, even though there's plenty of talent, is good enough necessarily to keep up. I don't know if their linebackers beyond Darius Leonard are rangy enough to sort of carry tight ends up the field. And I just don't know that they are so uniquely gifted that they can run this scheme that has sort of been cast aside by the NFL. So I think I'm skeptical of the defense, and that in combination with a downgraded quarterback and a fear of possibly being stuck with a replacement level quarterback if Jacoby Brissett does hold onto the ball too long and gets injured, is reason for me to be scared about their 2019 situation.
You mentioned that Dominique Foxworth talked about that scheme being sort of outdated. KJ Wright talked about it as well on the podcast. He talked about how Seattle was going away from it, right? And teams around the NFL that had previously been copying them were also going away from it in response to what offenses were doing. So I think that's astute. I think, yeah, the talent's just not quite there. They have a few, I think, stars on that side of the ball, but by and large, just looking at, you know, the Texans and the Jags, it's just not quite comparable. The Colts, it does put them in a really interesting position, Bill, I think, from like an organizational standpoint, like what is the future of this team, right? So this is Jacoby Brett. This is the last year of his rookie contract. He was not a first round draft pick. And so they're going to have to make a decision on him. And it's an interesting one, I think, because going into next year, so first of all, they could get off to they have a pretty difficult schedule at first. So they could get off to a tough start, I think. And then you start thinking about those rookies, the college quarterbacks that they might go after. Mm-hmm. They, as I mentioned, they have a ton of cap space, but I don't really see many quarterbacks hitting free agency.
Okay. So here, I don't know that I agree with you there. Here's what I'm going to say.
On the free agents?
Not on free agents, but what about trade candidates for the Indianapolis Colts? So let's say, for example, you're the Minnesota Vikings and you have Kirk Cousins making $28 million on a roster that is absolutely, positively, no vacancy left, totally capped out. and you're Mike Zimmer, and you want to run the ball 75% of the time. And if the Vikings go 8-8 or 9-7 this year with that defense, and you have a fan base that's frustrated with Kirk Cousins, just wants Teddy Bridgewater to come back, just wants him to start with a cheap quarterback and use their money to help keep that defensive core together, possibly invest in the offensive line. And the Colts say, hey, we have $106 million in cap space, and you have Kirk Cousins making $28 million. What if we trade you a mid-round pick? You get out of this Kirk Cousins deal. We get a one-year flyer on Kirk Cousins. That's not a free agent deal, but I think that could be a situation where they could lean to someone like that, or perhaps a Jimmy Garoppolo, where they can take a flyer on a guy who could be a franchise quarterback or an above-average passer who their teams want to get rid of for financial reasons. I think that the Colts could possibly be in the market for someone like that next offseason.
If Kirk Cousins becomes available, Kyle Shanahan's going to trade the whole team. So you gotta consider that. All 20 running backs and fullbacks for Kirk
Cousins.
He
would never trade Kyle Juszczyk. How dare you?
The Cousins, it is interesting because it's also, I think you look at Jacoby and you ask, okay, well, how good or how bad is he going to be, right? Obviously the Bucks and the Titans are going to be in similar territory this year, and it feels like there's a lot of teams right now with probably average quarterbacks who are going to be forced into some difficult decisions. And I think the Colts are going to be in that category. They have some ammunition, right, from the Montez Sweat trade, or the trade that with Washington sending them an extra second rounder to go up and get Sweat. They could use that. They could use that, by the way, to go up and get a Justin Herbert. It just gets very, very interesting. And the amount of cap space they have, and some of the excellence, I think, of the recent drafts makes it even more interesting and sort of raises the stakes, in my opinion. So I don't know what's going to happen. Right now, I think that they're going to be pretty good, but not great.
I agree. I think to another of Dominique's points, which he's paying me good money.
I was going to say, really?
But, the point you guys made together, I'm not sure if there was Dominique's point or your point, but you compare the Colts to the 2017-18 Boston Celtics, right?
Yeah, that was Dominique.
Right.
Celtics fans didn't like that.
They didn't like it.
Colts fans didn't like it either. Both sides didn't like it.
I liked it. I liked it because it was like, we did everything right. We prepared for this perfect scenario. And then this thing we couldn't have expected totally blew up all of our plans. And with the Celtics, it was, they signed, I can't think of the
Hayward.
They signed Hayward in the first day of the season. Kyrie is different. They screwed that up on their part. But they signed Hayward and he blows out his knee. And that, they miss him the entire season. Kyrie gets hurt and then Kyrie comes back and it's a disaster. And this situation that seems so great 2 years later, even though they did all the right things, because of things that were out of their control or things they weren't expecting, turns into an absolute mess. With the Colts, I don't think it's an absolute mess. I don't think we're anywhere close to that yet. But obviously, it seemed like, they had the cap space. They didn't go out and overspend in free agency. They had that culture. And now, that might not be worth that much without Andrew Luck. And I think even if Chris Ballard is doing the right things, which I think he is, even if Frank Reich is a great head coach, and I think he's certainly looks pretty promising after year one. That might not matter. I mean, it could just come down to you weren't able to keep this franchise player around for reasons that had nothing to do with how you were building your culture and how you built your football team. It just, there was some bad luck.
It really, I see what you did there. it really is amazing, right? Because it's so hard in the NFL to pay a quarterback at a market rate and still have cap space. And they somehow did it. And yet, it didn't work out. And the only conclusion you can draw from that is one, injuries are terrible and unpredictable and can lead to very sad outcomes. And two, the quarterback position is just so far away the most important thing in football by a long shot. And we will talk about the quarterback position and we'll talk about some other positions when we talk about a few of these teams. And I think the preseason more broadly, but before we get to that, we're going to do a mailbag. And before we get to the mailbag, I'm going to tell you about BetterHelp. Is there something that interferes with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? If so, BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who are specialized in issues such as depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, trauma, anger, family conflicts, LGBT matters, grief, self-esteem, and more. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment. Anything you share is confidential and so convenient. You can now get help at your own time and at your own pace. You can schedule secure video or phone sessions plus chat and text with your therapist. If you are not happy with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time at no additional charge. Best of all, it is truly affordable, and my listeners can get 10% off your first month with the discount code Lenny. So why not get started today? Go to betterhelp.com/Lenny. Simply fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with a counselor you'll love. betterhelp.com/Lenny.
Question. Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
So as always, if you leave a positive 5-star review in my iTunes page, I'll answer the question. You have to put a question in the review too. I can't make up a question from that. And yeah, so we'll get through a few of these. Bill, will you want to help me out with some of these questions?
For Lenny's sake, I will.
Oh boy, there's already some, well, we'll get to the blowback I've gotten about some of the Lenny. Okay, so email Darren asks, if the Seahawks were a classic literature book, what book would they be? Or any other team that might be interesting. Perhaps the Raiders could be the tale of two cities because of the move, as well as some wacky decisions that don't always make sense. Well, Bill, as a Seahawks trader, I'm not sure I'm qualified. Maybe a book about a famous trader to answer that one. What would you give? What classic literature would you give?
I feel like I was set up here by this question. Mina, what is your degree in?
It's in English.
It's in English. Funny how that works. I'm trying to think about what would you pick? Just a book about a trader?
Well, that would be about me and less about the Seahawks. Something about running. Run, Rabbit, Run. Is that a book? Rabbit Run is the John Updike book.
Rabbit Run. I think I would go with I think I would go with This Side of Paradise about the 2019 San Francisco 49ers, where they have acquired Jimmy Garoppolo and everyone was super thrilled. And then it's a year later and everyone's like, did we get screwed by Bill Belichick? Like, did he outsmart us? Is that what happened? as if that had never been a possibility. So I think I'll go with that.
That's a good one. Heat4Champs1532 asks, when a guy gets drafted to your team, what college gives you the most confidence in a player's ability to be good? Ooh. Well, that's interesting. I feel like it depends on the position, right? Like,
yes,
if a
sure.
guy is from Wisconsin and he's an offensive lineman, he's probably going to be good.
Or a guy whose last name is Watt.
Yeah, right, or his last name is Watt. I think UW player has kind of become, UW has kind of become DBU, Washington. Mm-hmm. Actually, we'll get to one of those guys later when we talk about these bad teams. What about with quarterbacks? It's too all over the place, I think.
North Dakota State for quarterbacks? there's something, I do like a weird location for a quarterback. Like, I think when I was a kid and Steve McNair went to Alcorn State, I was like, this is great. He's gotta be good if he's from Alcorn State and he's the second pick in the draft. Carson Wentz is kind of the same thing. Like, why wouldn't he be good if teams think he's that valuable if he's from North Dakota State?
Apparently Duke is the mean quarterback uncalled for.
I think Alabama is like the easy answer, but I haven't done a study on this, but it feels like a lot of Alabama players tend to struggle because they're beat up after playing so tough in college, playing against, you know, similarly talented players in practice, for a physical head coach. You're playing in the postseason every year. Usually getting to the national championship game. Alabama seems like the obvious answer, but I don't know that it actually is.
Interesting. Yeah, I think, and that's certainly right. Has ramifications for positions, especially some of the running backs that have come over out of there over the last few years. Robo Nelson asks, first he says he applauds Lenny's fearless, incisive interview style.
Thank you.
His question is, what's the over-under on 1.5 broken legs for Washington quarterbacks this year? Oh, no.
That's
no,
mean.
No, no.
Also, their doctors don't know how medicine works, apparently, so I can't definitely even diagnose a broken leg correctly.
Well, actually, you know, it's funny. You're talking about Alabama players, and I was thinking about how Washington has that, like, all-Alabama defensive line.
Mm-hmm.
This year, which was weirdly not excellent last year at stopping the run, but should be better this year. we're not going to talk about Washington later at all, but obviously Case Keenum is the starting quarterback. What's the over? Let me change his question. Sorry, Rob Nelson. What's the over under on games before Dwayne Haskins starts for you?
Ooh, it might be two, might be 1.5. Like that's not a patient franchise to begin with. And when's their home opener? Their home opener is,
they've got the beginning of the schedule is tough too.
Okay, so they play easier, so this is easy. This is actually really easy. So they are at Philadelphia in week one. They're probably going to get smashed, is my guess. They host the Cowboys in week two, so that's a rivalry game. Then Monday, week three, Monday Night Football against the Chicago Bears, who have pretty good defense at home in Washington. I think the chances that Dwayne Haskins is in for the second half of that game against the Bears.
Oh, in the second half.
Yes. Yeah. Either because they're down 35 points or Case Keenum was obliterated by Khalil Mack or both, I think are pretty high. I think Booger McFarland is already preparing his notes for Dwayne Haskins for the second half of that game.
And then the next game, we get the Haskins, Daniel Jones.
At the Giants. That's such a winnable game.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Next question. Peepo is God.
By the way, this is more 5-star reviews than my podcast has after 4 years.
Well, they call it a call to action, right? So if you say, I'll do this thing, if you put in a 5-star review, I don't mean to, you know, reveal the underpinnings of my show. So we're going to talk about Miami, but we're not going to talk as much about the quarterback situation. And that's what his question is about. He asks, what would the worst possible outcome be for the Dolphins this year? Would it be Ryan Fitzpatrick starting and going 6-10? Or Rosen gets hot and gets injured, then Fitzpatrick comes in and the team falls apart, putting him in position to draft a top quarterback? This is a lot of fan fiction here.
Yeah.
I think Ryan Fitzpatrick, or I guess either of the quarterbacks starting and ending up with a 6-10 record is not where you want to be.
Okay, so that's the worst case scenario. What would the best case scenario be for you?
Rosen being awesome. First of all, he looks significantly better than Ryan Fitzpatrick and should be the starter, based on the preseason. But yeah, of course, because you don't want to, if you don't have to, look, it would be great to get Tua, right? But if you already know that Rosen's the guy, that's the best possible answer.
Sure, that's true. I think the best case scenario is Ryan Fitzpatrick beats the Patriots in week two, gives a very gives like his Conor McGregor 2.0 press conference. And then 2 weeks later, he and Kenny Stills get traded to a team that needs a quarterback and a wide receiver. Josh Rosen takes over after the bye and looks pretty good. The worst case scenario, I think, is what that guy said, which was Ryan Fitzpatrick is like good. Like he's they're, you know, they're 3-5 and they bring in Rosen and he gets hurt in, you know, the second half of his first start, and then Fitzpatrick plays out the rest of the season and they're 6-10.
The best case scenario is Rosen comes in from the very beginning, beats the Patriots, and then does this entire press conference with his hands on his hips, slumping, his body language. Last question, Thomas Idlemuller asks, are the Steelers destined to repeat the long and hard Malone-Brister period suffered after Bradshaw retired, or will they address the closing window of Big Ben's career with a draft pick sooner rather than later? So I'm higher on the Steelers this season, I think, increasingly. I like them. But they do not seem to be ready for a post-Ben future yet. No disrespect to Mason Rudolph or Josh Dobbs. But what, Ben has like 3 years on his deal left or 2 years after this? Or
did he sign? He signed an extension, correct?
He did. I think probably 1 year, right, realistically after this. So I think it's okay if they waited another season. But, you know, you're never going to get the guy, I think. Well, not never, but increasingly these teams with aging elite quarterbacks aren't like drafting their successors.
Also, by the way, I don't know how widely this guy wants to cut the swath of post Bradshaw malaise. In between Bradshaw and Roethlisberger, the Steelers made the playoffs 7 times, made it to a Super Bowl, made it to 2 conference championships. Like they had, or made it to 3 conference championships. They had like a 20-year period that most teams in the NFL would kill for, and it was like they kind of stunk, but they didn't get their guy. Now, they had Neil O'Donnell, who was fine, I guess. They had Mark Malone, who was okay. They had Cordell Stewart, who was exciting, but probably a little before his time. They drafted Antoine Randle-El and Hines Ward, then didn't play either of them at quarterback. But they didn't get Ben Roethlisberger until they were 6-10. So they had to have that bad year to be in sort of position to get that guy. And it hurt, of course, in that moment. They were, you know, 2 year removed from a 13-3 season, 1 year removed from a 10-5-1 season, but sort of bottoming out for that 1 year got them their quarterback for the next 15. Right. So
you have to have that year, right? Like the situations in which you don't do that are so rare. Or obviously, you know, the Favre, Rodgers, even though there was
I think Mahomes is the example,
Mahomes
right?
Where is like, the, right.
Like, but how many teams are brave enough to make that move and well, have and a also quarterback who can do that?
With Mahomes, even though Alex Smith was great that last year, he wasn't regarded as great, right?
Right,
you know what
exactly.
I mean? Like, he wasn't seen as that, like, legendary elite quarterback.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to talk about a legendary elite quarterback in New York, too. But before we get there, I'm going to take a minute and tell you about ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart, a place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply for your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MINA, ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Okay, so like, Mina, have you ever seen your partner like dance with someone else at a wedding?
No.
No?
Well, maybe like his mom.
Yeah, it's like, it's, that's what like listening to you do a ZipRecruiter ad is. Like, I do ZipRecruiter ads on my show. I listen to other people's podcasts. I do ZipRecruiter ads. I get angry. I get defensive. I don't even get paid by ZipRecruiter, and I still have this brand loyalty.
Do you get self-critical? Like, you see me do a ZipRecruiter ad, and it would be like if your partner was dancing with, I don't know, Ciara at a wedding.
My partner's
still
Russell
pandering
Wilson,
to Russell
so
Wilson. Take me back. Okay. Well, speaking of things that are painful, you wrote this column. No, the column's not painful. The column's very good. But it was about kind of the FPI's teams that are least likely to make it to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about a few of them, really because two of them are quite newsy and one is a team I felt like I did a bad job of talking about in my division previews. But I like your approach to this column because I, as a Seahawks fan, have certainly gone through many seasons with low expectations. But when you have a team that you know has no chance of making the Super Bowl, perhaps not even of making it to the playoffs, you find ways to get excited about them, right? There are things you are looking for. And I think that's true of all these teams. And I think it is especially true of the first team I want to talk about, the New York Giants, a.k.a. the team that is going to make me look like the biggest idiot in the history of idiots.
That was
a direct Dave Gettleman quote.
Yeah, that was a typo, actually. The Giants are making the playoffs this year, so we actually need to remove them from the column. As a Giants fan, I feel like I should mention that.
Are you going to get dragged by Gettleman, or is it just me? How many people is he going to drag? It's so many.
So here's the
button.
So you know how, like, he did the, like, typing thing last year when he was talking about people talking about Saquon?
The nerds.
So that was the week that I wrote a big piece on why the Giants shouldn't take Saquon for ESPN.com. So, like, this is probably just me having a big ego. I think there was at least, like, a 20% chance that that bit was about me. So I feel like I've already been dragged by Dave Gettleman before he even drafted Saquon Barkley to begin with.
Well, now I want to look at the GIF of him typing, and then I have to look at you typing to see if it looks like you when you type, because I've never seen you typing. But he did make kind of a Barnwell-esque facial expression. So he's gloating. Shermer's gloating. Giants fans who were very unhappy on draft night are now gloating. After three preseason games of Daniel Jones. So let's start there, because I think obviously this is the most important question when it comes to the Giants season and in terms of what Giants fans should be looking for, what they should be wanting. I do think a lot of it revolves around the quarterback position. So Daniel Jones has looked really good so far in the preseason. He, to me, I'll give you kind of my review, and then you, as the Giants fan, can weigh in. I think he has looked sharp. He has had a quick release. He's athletic, but we knew he was athletic coming out of college. Mm-hmm. I think his arm looks good. I think that he has obviously not played a lot of first-team defenses, and when he has, it was funny, I was watching that game, the last game, week three, I watched most of his drives, and the announcers were going nuts over the deep balls, which were total 50-50, but he was just throwing it up. But he was really nice on the short and intermediate stuff, and I was like, just praise the stuff he's actually doing well, you don't have to. But, you know, I'll be curious to see, he has fumbled a few times, which I think is a little bit concerning. I think for me, the question with him is kind of, you know, well, what does he look like against real NFL quality pressure, right, on a consistent basis? 100%. But I think undeniably, it's been very promising.
Right. I mean, like, there's nothing wrong with playing well against second team defenses. Doesn't mean that he sucks.
You should.
Like yeah. That's great. That's awesome. If you're, you know, if you're the first pick in the Major League Baseball draft and you go to like low A ball and you're awesome against, you know, dudes with guts and guys who haven't played baseball in a couple of years, like you're going to be look awesome. Great. You should. With Daniel Jones, I mean, you look at how he performed, to your point, he's played three series against first team defenses, all of which came against the Bengals. Two of them, there were no scores. Third one, he took a strip sack, which is obviously bad. And he had two big plays, which ended up setting up a touchdown. They were both, like you said, 50-50 balls where he was throwing it up to, I have the dude's names. They're not players.
Darius Slayton was one because he made a great, I remember. Yes. I felt so bad for him because the announcers were like, Daniel Jones throws a rope. I was like, that right receiver just made an unbelievable play on the ball.
Yes.
And his name was Darius Slayton.
Darius Slayton and Britton Golden, who kind of sounds like a WB character, like a WB actor or actress from 2006, Britton Golden.
Yeah, Britton Golden is definitely like the hottest dude at prep school.
And like, you know, it's great. Those guys made plays. And I think, but it's clear that they were like, okay, we're going to set you up with a one-on-one matchup, throw a catchable ball up there. And, yeah. You know, it's not like, it wasn't like a very complicated route combination or anything. And I mean, the Bengals defense, I'm not going to lie, it's not exactly the best defense on the planet either. So, I think it's great to get hopeful. It's great that he's played positively so far, but there have been so many quarterbacks through history who've been taken high in the first round, yeah. Who have been like projects, who their fans have come out on Twitter after a couple of good preseason games and been like, we should know. I've heard a story about one NFL general manager who literally was in the press box muttering after his top 10 pick, top 15. I don't like a top half of the first round quarterback played well in the preseason. And he's like, what do those guys think now about blank blank? And he sucked. He
did not have a good NFL career.
I think you know who blank blank is. And just like we just don't know yet. It's okay. Like, yeah. It's nothing wrong, but we have no idea what Daniel Jones is going to be. The same way we didn't know what Mark Sanchez was going to be after he posted a 111.0 passer rating during his first preseason, or how Blake Bortles was going to play when he posted 110 passer rating
during his first preseason. I remember the Blake Bortles preseason. Mm-hmm. So vividly.
The Blake Bortles truthers were out in full force. For years to come. And part of it was that preseason. And then I remember getting tweets like, are you going to take back what you said about Blake Bortles? And it's, no, I'm not going to take back. Like, we haven't even seen him play against a real defense yet. And I'm not saying that we should have known they were going to be bad because they played well in the preseason, but they were totally different players in the regular season than they were in the preseason. Last year, Nathan Peterman was awesome in the preseason. And you might kind of figure, mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's a good sign, right? And then we know what happened next. It's just, there's a fundamental difference between how defenses play in the regular season versus how they play in the preseason, both in terms of personnel and less so, I think, than years past, but in terms of how much they want to blitz, how much they want to pressure opposing quarterbacks. It happens, but they don't want to show a lot during the preseason. So I don't think Giants fans should be upset about Daniel Jones, but I don't think anything's changed.
Yeah, I think it was maybe Daniel Jeremiah who tweeted that this season, more than ever, defensive coordinators aren't showing anything in the preseason. It's like the most vanilla defenses. I mean, well, that's the preseason this year in general, which is
I don't know if he works for NFL Network as well, but Brian Baldinger said teams are blitzing more than ever before. So I don't know. I don't know if Daniel Jeremiah is at odds with the Baldy breakdown, but I don't know that.
They're watching different games.
Right. They're watching different games and probably seeing different things, which is also realistically possible.
So look, we're talking about kind of Daniel Jones and how to evaluate what he's done so far. And I think we're in agreement. But all of that said, he should start, in my opinion.
Yeah, of course.
For a number of reasons. The primary reason being, he's as good as Eli Manning. I think there's no reason at this point to play Eli. The other reason, I think, and this is kind of this, there's this larger debate always in the NFL about when should you start a rookie quarterback, right? And for me, Bill, my feeling is start him right away, get him those reps.
Yep.
Unless the offensive line is a train wreck. Because I think you don't want to roll out your rookie quarterback into it. You won't want him in a David Carr scenario. Now, I think the Giants offensive line looks pretty good.
Yes.
That was kind of one of my other takeaways from the preseason. Soldier's been up and down, but, you know, you've got Zeitler in there now. Mike Remmers on the right side. Will Hernandez take another step forward. So I think, given the situation and then given what you've got in Eli Manning, there's no question to me that they should start Jones immediately.
Yeah, I think absolutely. This isn't a situation like Washington, for example, where they're going to start Dwayne Haskins and have Eric Flowers playing left tackle, who is the former Giants player, coincidentally enough. I mean, they have, their offensive line is something they have invested in. If you want to criticize Dave Gettleman, I think there's a long line and you should get in the queue behind everyone else. But I think if you want to praise him, the one thing you can say he has done well is he's upgraded what was one of the worst offensive lines in football to a much more promising unit, at least on paper. So, you would figure Daniel Jones is going to be in a positive situation there, and he's going to, you would also figure, have a running game with Saquon Barkley. So, I don't think he has the same sort of risk when it comes to playing him early in the season as, a quarterback of a different ilk or on a different team without a running game who's going to have to shoulder much more of the workload than Daniel Jones would have to. But I don't know. I mean, I look at this Giants schedule. I'm trying to find like the week where it seems like it would make sense to put Daniel Jones into the lineup. I wonder if it's just week 3.
I'm doing this.
Week 3, you're playing at Tampa. You're playing probably the worst pass defense you're going to play all year.
Oh, yeah.
You have 2 home games against Washington and Minnesota afterwards. So Minnesota's a good defense, but, 2 home games with Daniel Jones. If the Giants are like, if they start 0-3 against the Cowboys, the Bills, and the Bucks, I don't see why you have Eli Manning in there at that point going forward. I think there's nothing wrong with having, if you're the Giants and you play, you say after week 3, okay, we're going with Daniel Jones. He's going to be our guy. Eli just, we have the utmost respect for Eli. I say week 17, say we're going to start Eli. It's going to be like his retirement farewell game. We're going to retire his jersey after the game, like against the Eagles at home. Do that, but don't play Eli all season just because you got burnt benching him a couple of years ago.
Against an easy schedule, by the way, as I'm looking at it. I think Daniel Jones should be the beneficiary of that schedule if he's the future of the organization. Another team that I think would be best served by playing their young quarterback is Miami, but we don't need to talk about that too much. What I do want to talk about, your column, you have these suggestions of things that kind of fans can hope for, and there's an interesting one here with Miami, Bill, because you wrote, in addition to talking about the quarterbacks, find a pass rusher.
Yeah.
Okay, so Miami obviously got rid of all their pass rushers this season as part of Operation Fish Tank. And they still have got, they have Charles Harris, who never gets talked about. That was their first round pick from a couple of years ago. Yeah. But after that, there's not a lot there. They've got Christian Wilkins on the interior, who they drafted this year, is one of the few players that they can build around. Well, Bill, it's funny because, turns out there's a pass rusher that Miami is very interested in, and his name is Jadeveon Clowney. I mispronounced it many, many times in my last podcast. It's not Jadeveon, it's Jadeveon. So I want to ask you about, well, let me give some information first. Okay, so this is from our buddy Field Yates, who, since I opened it on my computer, has tweeted 21 more times, according to Twitter. If Jadeveon Clowney were to be traded, he first has to sign his franchise tender. He's due $16 million in cash this year against the cap. All that counts.
I like that you say in cash. Like they have to give him a briefcase.
I'm reading Phil's tweet. Field's tweet. He cannot be extended until after this season.
Yes.
And he's 26 years old. So let's talk about that. How do you feel about that potential, I guess, outcome for Miami?
That's the key part to me, right? Like, if you're the Dolphins, basically you're paying him for a year where you're not going to compete at a franchise tag level, and you don't even get the possibility of signing him to an extension until next offseason. And Jadeveon Clowney has no reason to sign an extension with you the first chance he gets, he would very happily hit free agency. It's not like the Dolphins are going to be such an exciting opportunity that he's probably going to want to stay. I mean, he's not going to give you much of a discount. You're not a very good football team. You're still years away from being really competitive. Maybe he just is going to love Miami so much that he'll take less money. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think you can probably have a good shot at signing him next offseason yourself in free agency. I don't know if he's going to get a second franchise tag. And I think I would probably wait. I think the Dolphins have been very smart this offseason. They've acquired a bunch of extra draft picks, as our friend Field Gage did note on Twitter as well. They have an extra two, 4, 6, and 7 maybe. So they have 4 extra picks in the 2019 draft, or 2020 draft. So I would hold on to those picks. I would not make an all-in move or a significant move for someone like a Jadeveon Clowney. Now, on the flip side, if the Texans do come out and say, we're not keeping this guy, we got to cut our salaries to make a move for someone like a Trent Williams, we're going to just trade him to the highest bidder in 9 days, and the Dolphins offer a 6th-round pick, and the Texans say, hey, this is our guy, or a 4th-round pick, and they say, hey, we're willing to make that trade, I think I'd consider making that trade for a year and then franchising him and seeing how it goes from there. I just think it's just a tough – he's such a tough player to pay because he hasn't had that season we all know he's capable of yet. So he's going to get paid by someone like he's going to have that season. But if you're the Texans or you're someone trading for him like the Dolphins, when he hasn't had that year, do you want to pay him for what we know he's capable of doing, even if he hasn't done it yet?
You're still getting a ton of – first of all, he's one of the – I mean, I talked about this last week with Greg Rosenthal. He is one of the best run defenders in the league. And he does disrupt the quarterback. He just doesn't have that sack production, right?
Right.
But yes, we are talking about, a lot of a significant amount of money. It's funny, we're questioning it from the Dolphins' perspective. I would also question this from Houston's perspective.
For sure.
Trading him for, I don't know, you said they have an extra second rounder, right? Given that if he walks next season, they get a third. And he's probably going to play this year. It doesn't seem like it's worth it to me.
If you're the Texans also, like, you have a lot of cap space next year. You are not hurting for money next year. I don't know how much it is. I'm going to look it up, but I think it's like they're not quite the Colts level, but they have some of the most cap space in all of football in 2020. It's $85.8 million before they give Jadeveon Clowney any possible extension for 2020 and beyond. So you can afford to franchise Jadeveon Clowney a second time. And if you're going to trade him, you would figure you're going to have a lot more leverage trading him next March for maybe the Frank Clark haul than you could have trading him now when teams already have their budgets kind of set. They can't sign him to an extension. I just don't think, especially given that you have Deshaun Watson on a rookie deal, I don't think this is the time to make that trade.
And let's, again, kind of bring this back to Fish Tank. Mm-hmm. Why do you want Jadeveon Clowney this year if you're the Dolphins?
Like maybe you're trying to convince your fans that they should be invested in your team because you traded for Jadeveon Clowney. Maybe you're building a core. Like, I don't really buy that. I think that maybe you think you don't have a path to a great pass rusher, but this is a team that we know is never going to have trouble attracting talent in free agency. I think they need to focus on figuring out what they have in terms of their own core. They should re-sign Laremy Tunsil. They need to obviously figure out what's happening with Josh Rosen. Maybe see what they have at receiver with the guys like Devontae Parker, who, I mean, they've been waiting to see possibly break through for years. They're clearly undergoing a fundamental overhaul on defense, but I think giving up a draft pick, maybe making your team better in a year where you're probably trying to tank for a quarterback and trading for a guy that you probably can get next year, I don't see the logic for the Dolphins.
That's the other concern. Okay, so when you think about like a rebuilding team and what are the pieces you really need, right? The quarterback and the pass rusher perhaps, and you think about how limited or how difficult it is to get those pieces, it's not that hard to get a pass rusher, either in the draft or free agency or through a trade. It's much harder. I mean, we just talked about Indianapolis, right? And how difficult it'll be for them to get the quarterback. And if I'm Miami, you don't know where you're going to get out of Rosen this year. And we talked about like the best case scenario is that he's great, right? But that's not the most likely scenario. Now it would be terrific. And I think he looks better than Fitzpatrick, but the most likely scenario is you're going after Tua.
Right.
But if you're not the worst team in the NFL, Bill, I think you really want to hold on to that second round draft pick in case you got to move around in the draft. Like if I'm the Dolphins, given the fact that this team desperately needs a quarterback, I would not be loosey-goosey with my draft capital. I'm really crushing these pronunciations right now. I would not be... I can't bring myself to say the word I just said again, but I would not be non-discriminating with my assets. Like, I just don't... It doesn't make sense to me to give up picks for Clowney when you know you're going to have to do whatever it takes to figure out the quarterback position.
Can I just mention something about the Miami Dolphins front office page on their website? So they have like a bunch of, you know, old white guys as vice chairman and many vice chairmen. The next one is Don Shula. And then next to Don Shula is Fergie. And it's that Fergie. And it just says partner underneath her name. It's just a big picture of Fergie. It's so good. Then it's Mark Anthony.
Forget.
And the Williams.
People forget about the celebrity owners of the Dolphins, right? I was thinking about that with the Jay-Z thing. Like, no one talks about them.
I had no idea. If you had asked me what NFL team does Fergie own, I would have passed out before I had a viable answer for you. I mean, this is a Dolphins team that is, at least in some ways, trying to emulate the Patriots, right? I mean, they brought in Brian Flores to be the head coach. Chris Greer has been with the Dolphins for a long time, but someone who did work under Bill Parcells and Bill Belichick, and Greer was with the Patriots as well for several years before moving to Miami. I mean, this is a team that wants to emulate what the Patriots are doing. Trading a second-round pick for Jadeveon Clowney is, like, the exact opposite of what the Patriots do. They hoard mid-round picks, and they don't value pass rushers. So I always love this when guys leave the Patriots organization or teams try to emulate the Patriots and then do the exact opposite of what Bill Belichick actually does. It feels like the same sort of – you can understand the logic, but it doesn't fit what the Patriots have done, and it might be better just to emulate what New England's been doing.
Mm, yes. I can empathize. I'm the person who does all the studying before, like, the fantasy draft, and then – the auction comes around, I'm like, put it all on Odell, and I completely disregard everything I've been taught. So perhaps I am the Miami Dolphins. I want to talk about one more team before we get to our last segment. And I want to talk about this team because I feel like I kind of gave them the short shrift during the division previews. And, that's the Cincinnati Bengals.
I understand the clamor for Bengals content from the Mina Kimes show featuring Lenny has been palpable all over the internet. So let's go.
I felt bad, and I also thought your entry on kind of the things that Bengals fans should want to happen, should look for this season were interesting, because obviously there's many, many areas in which they could hope for some improvement. But the most important thing, and the thing I think Bengals fans should be most concerned about, is the quarterback position. In what universe is Andy Dalton the quarterback on this team next year?
I don't think it's that crazy, to be honest with you.
What?
This is why would you think that they would suddenly make a move with Andy Dalton? I understand in pretty much every other situation, a team would not want to go into the final year of a quarterback's deal. Andy Dalton has been okay for his entire career, except for one season in 2015 when he had the best offensive line and maybe a top five set of weapons in the NFL and played incredible football until he got hurt. He is making a fair amount of money. He is sort of the poster child for if you have a quarterback who is this good and making this much money, dump it back into the pile and just draft a rookie quarterback and use the money elsewhere. But the Bengals operate in their own way. They don't play by anyone else's rules, for better or worse. I mean, they don't go out and make a lot of trades, Cordy Glenn being perhaps an exception. They don't spend a lot in free agency. They bring in players for cheap if they or they draft them, and if they like them, they tend to re-sign them and keep them around. And Andy Dalton is a guy they drafted and developed, and a guy who, for years now, they thought is good enough to win, possibly a playoff game with. And he hasn't yet. There's been injuries, I think, in 2015. I think was the year where he was really good. They had a healthy Dalton in that playoff game against the Steelers, they probably win that game. And obviously that turned out not to be the case. I mean, he was fine for the first 2 weeks of last year, through that Falcons game where they came back and started 4-1 after a win over the Dolphins, then kind of collapsed and he got hurt. They were still 5-3 before the bye, and then he got hurt, I think, in the Saints game. And then there was Jeff Driscoll the rest of the way. AJ Green got hurt kind of around the same point as well. But I mean, I think if you're the Bengals and you're inclined to think that Andy Dalton is a good quarterback, because you spent 8 years telling yourself he's a good quarterback, I think if he's passable this year, unless they end up with a top five pick and have the opportunity to draft someone like a Tua or Justin Herbert, I think they could probably run it back with Andy Dalton and feel like they're going to be a competitive team.
So many thoughts, first of which is thinking about that one playoff game. I'm going into Houston tomorrow, and Do you know who Houston's backup quarterbacks are? This is tough.
AJ McCarron?
It was one of them. The other one's Joe Webb.
Okay. Joe Webb's done like 100 passes during the preseason, by the way. Like he's like the cumulative passing yardage leader in the preseason.
The only thing I remember from that playoff game is at one point photoshopping a crying Jordan onto AJ McCarron's chest plate tattoo, which is the most 2016?
Early 2016.
That's the most early 2016 sentence you could ever put together. But I see what you're saying. I mean, yes, you're talking about what the Bengals could do based on their past behavior. Although this is a team that finally fired.
They
Martin
did.
Lewis.
That's true.
But I guess as you're talking about that, I think about as we've talked through kind of the quarterback options for next year and the things teams can or can't do to put themselves in positions to get a quarterback. It just feels to me that this is, I thought they should go after Haskins this year, and it's interesting, right? To think strategically. Okay. Well, sometimes if you've got a quarterback, like Andy Dalton doesn't make a ton of money. What's like high teens at this point or something. So fine. It's cool to roll with him, but you know, if you've got a young guy who you actually believe in, then it's okay to hang on to him and sort of let that, whether it would be Haskins or whoever, develop, but they haven't done that with him. Mm-hmm. So it puts them in that sort of awkward position where you either rip the Band-Aid and move on. There's not like that sort of transitional period that they can set themselves up for. I think to me, just to focus more like on what as a fan you should root for, you want this team to lose.
I don't know. I mean, I think that like, it seems like their logic in years past was, well, Andy Dalton was great when he had help. He had a good offensive line and he had a good receiving core. And so they had a transition plan, right? Like they drafted Cedric Ogbui thinking, okay, he's going to be a left tackle of the future when Andrew Whitworth is too expensive or too old. And they let Andrew Whitworth move to Los Angeles and he's been incredible. And Cedric Ogbui was the worst tackle in football when he started until he got benched and eventually moved on. So that, the plan didn't work out. They let Marvin Jones go. They let Mohamed Sanu go and kind of said, okay, well, next to AJ Green, let's draft John Ross in the first round. He's a speed threat. Makes total sense. Mm. We have someone who can threaten defenses downfield. John Ross hasn't stayed healthy. He hasn't been a productive player at the NFL level. This year they drafted Jonah Williams in the first round. He was supposed to replace Ogbui, supposed to supplement the offensive line and move Cordy Glenn to right tackle. Then you have a core and Andy Dalton. Well, Jonah Williams is out for the year.
Yes.
Their offensive line, which was a problem was a disaster 2 years ago and a problem last year, is already down two starters with Clint Bowling retiring. It's a total mess. And Billy Price, their 2018 first round pick, still seems like he's maybe a question mark. And that's just a shame. I mean, you can't be a draft and develop team when you draft the wrong guys.
Or when they get hurt, right? It's like the Indy thing, right? Or you can talk about, okay, you're doing everything right. Like you're this team and you're a team that wants to build around the line. Clearly that was a priority for them trying to rebuild it, but then Jonah Williams goes down and there's nothing you can do about it. And suddenly you're looking at 2020 again, and maybe that line will be better when you do bring in the next quarterback.
Right. But they had Billy Price, their first round pick for 2018. You know, you figure year two, he's on the bench to start the year. That's not a good sign.
Yeah. And I would say things that they can be hopeful about. Some of the younger players on the defensive line. Carl Lawson, who tore his ACL, you know, had a bit of a setback year. He was actually not playing super well also before he tore his ACL, which is concerning, but he was really, really good as a rookie.
Absolutely.
So you could hope for a bounce back year from him. Sam Hubbard, I think towards the end of the year, once they had him playing on the edge, looked a lot better. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the defensive stars that they've leaned on over the last few years are getting older now. God, getting older. How old is Geno Atkins now?
Geno Atkins is, I think, 31. They're both on the wrong side of 30, but not by much.
They're still good for the near term, but, you know, in terms of just kind of focusing this conversation on what should Bengals fans be hoping for this year, they want those young players. They want Sam Hubbard. They want Lawson to have a bounce back year. They need guys that they can point to as being the cornerstones of the franchise for that next phase.
It does feel like it's going to be tough for them to compete, but I mean, every one of these teams in the AFC North has holes. Like the Browns offensive line is a mess. Their secondary might not be that good. The Steelers are, you know, their quarterback is very old. Their defense was struggling last year. They, you know, lost two very valuable players in Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell. The Ravens, you know, they're running a very different sort of scheme with Lamar Jackson. I think people are underestimating how different it's going to be, even given what we saw last year. That might not work out. Lamar Jackson might not be able to stay healthy. The defense lost a ton of talent. It's not crazy to think that the Bengals could compete for the division, and it also seems most likely that they're probably going to be a last place team.
Let me ask this, and let's wrap up here. Just kind of, who do you think, again, thinking through this lens of like these teams that are not likely to make it to the playoffs, who do you think has more players that they can build around, Miami or Cincinnati?
That's a good
like
question.
Cornerstones.
I think absolute guys where you feel like they are locks to be Pro Bowl caliber players, you go with Miami because they have
It's crazy, right?
They have Laremy Tunsil, who I think is a very, if not like a top three left tackle, like a top 10 left tackle with upside. And then they have Xavier Howard, who's phenomenal and an absolute star cornerback. And then with the Bengals, they have William Jackson, who's very underrated. I think a very good cornerback, but one of the guys who got beat by those Giants we were mentioning earlier.
I know, I was thinking about
anonymous
that.
Names, but I think overall he's a very good corner. But then their better players are A.J. Green, who's now getting older, about to get his third contract. Geno Atkins, who's on his third contract. Carlos Dunlap on his third contract. I mean, Tyler Boyd is promising, but you'd rather have Laremy Tunsil than Tyler Boyd, and it's not particularly close. So, you know, I think the Bengals have to hit. They have to have a draft pick turn into a superstar, and they haven't now in several seasons.
Yeah, and with the Dolphins, too. If Wilkins and Fitzpatrick become, you know,
right,
and make it solid starters. Those are positions at which you want like young cheap players at.
Yes.
So there's reasons to be excited about that. All right, speaking of reasons to be excited about things, I'm going to tell you a little bit about Upstart. As most of us found out the hard way, getting into debt is easy, getting out is hard, especially if your FICO score is not great. Thankfully, now there's upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than just your credit score and offers smart interest rates to help you pay off high-interest credit card debt. Upstart goes beyond the traditional FICO score when assessing your creditworthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter interest rate. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. They believe in you, and they understand that. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate in just a few minutes without affecting your credit score. The best part? Once the loan is approved, most people get their funds the very next business day. The next business day. Over 200,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards, student loans, fund their weddings, or make a large purchase. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot. And hurry to upstart.com/Mina to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes and it won't affect your credit. That's upstart.com/Mina.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Okay, Bill, I've got five. Well, I've got four questions for you. Fifth one is from Lenny.
Yes.
Question number one. You travel a lot, as anyone who follows you on Instagram knows. What? It's Instagram, Bill Barnwell. Is probably
it's private.
You're not private, are you?
I am 100% private.
Oh, never mind then. Okay. So as somebody who's allowed to see Bill Barnwell's private Instagram, he travels a lot. And I was just wondering, what is the like most exciting place you've traveled to over the last year or so that you would recommend to people?
It's Melbourne, Australia. It's got to be Melbourne. My favorite city on the planet is Melbourne, Australia. I would move, if I could somehow cover the NFL and live in Melbourne, I would in a heartbeat. I would be gone. Like I'd probably take my girlfriend. I don't think she'd be super psyched if I lived without her. But besides that, Maggie, my dog, which does not have a podcast deal, but I would take those two and that would be it. Like I would be on the next flight. And the time zones make it a little difficult, but it feels, especially compared to the places I've lived recently, which, you know, New York and DC, it feels undiscovered and discovered at the same time somehow, which is a strange combination. It feels very San Francisco-y, but without the tech bros, which is a much better version of San Francisco to me. But I have nothing but wonderful things to say about Melbourne. I think it's fantastic.
I only have one question for you, which is, did you know before you went that it was pronounced Melbourne?
I did, of course.
I didn't know that.
I know how to pronounce Jadeveon Clowney's name. I know how to pronounce several Australian cities.
Melbourne is not intuitive.
I will say I have mispronounced Daniel Hunter's name over and over again throughout his career. So I am also.
What do you call?
I just call him Danielle. pretty frequently. And then I was rolling
with Daniil for a while.
I think that's closer. Nothing wrong with that. I think
Melbourne. People mispronounce my name all the time. I'm cool with it. Second question, football question. So PI rules are changing. We've talked about it a lot. I won't get into it. You can challenge, coaches can challenge it, blah, blah, blah. It's reviewable. Do you think it's going to be a big deal?
No. I think it'll be a big deal for like two games. It'll be one playoff game where it'll be an absolutely ridiculous, annoying, over-the-top story. There'll be a million opinion articles about it. But I think overall, it's going to be fine.
Third question. Oh, by the way, on the PI rules, one thing I've really enjoyed during the preseason is every time a coach challenges it, they're smiling and laughing. I don't know if you've noticed that. They're clearly just loving it and trolling each other so much and trolling the refs. Third question. What is a video game you were unusually good at as a child?
Ooh, that's a good question. What was a video game I was unusually good at? I would say Paperboy. I don't know if you remember.
I remember Paperboy.
I feel like the Paperboy and the various Paperboy entities, not only like the throwing papers, but also like at the end of Paperboy levels, there'd be like a random like obstacle course you'd have to also play, which is apparently part of Paper Refs that I was not aware of. As someone who grew up in the city, there was something very sort of novel about the idea of this idyllic suburbia where you could just ride your bike and just throw out papers. It really made me like want to move out of New York City.
Becoming a paperboy.
Yes.
Two games I really love. Tetris. I'm incredibly good at Tetris because I had a Game Boy and we drove around the country a lot and I would play Tetris on the Game Boy and just beasted it.
So you were a Game Boy and not a Game Gear family?
Well, I was a Game Girl, technically. But yeah, we got free Game Boys because my parents went to a, I feel like I've told this story before, one of those things where you pretend to be interested in a timeshare. And
oh, wow.
That's how much my parents love me. They sat through a 3-hour presentation on a timeshare so me and my brother could get free Game Boys.
That's incredible.
And then I also really loved this game called Greebles, which was a computer game that my brother and I, it was a 2-player game. And so my brother and I would play together. And then one day we realized there was a function where you could see how much time you had spent playing Greebles. No. And it was like a year of our life.
Oh, no.
Really disturbing. Question 4. You mentioned earlier that the Bengals could compete in the AFC North. Who's going to win the AFC North?
Who's going to win the AFC North? I think the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to win the AFC North. Mm. I think they fixed the issues with their secondary by adding Steven Nelson. There was this huge, ugly, awful sinkhole at cornerback. I think this could be like a big breakout year for TJ Watt. I could see him having like one of those 13 sack seasons that we know he's hinted at, but hasn't quite got there yet. And I think
are
it's
you buying
just,
the Devin Bush hype?
That was like their biggest point of weakness last year is that there was a huge hole at inside linebacker. They decided not to replace Ryan Shazier. And I would write about it and I'd get angry Steelers fans tweeting at me like, oh, they're just not going to play an inside linebacker more than 10% of the time. And it's like, you guys have seen defenses before. You know how this works. Like the Patriots have Rob Gronkowski. The Chiefs have Travis Kelce. You don't have a guy who can cover those guys without Ryan Shazier. So I think that's a position that I don't really think is very important typically, but they absolutely needed to upgrade there. So I think that is their biggest holes on defense have been fixed. And like, I think they're going to be just fine on offense. They're not going to be maybe quite as good. If Juju gets hurt, that's going to be a problem. But I do think one of their young receivers is going to step up and be more productive than we were expecting.
Yes. Classic Steelers, right?
Right.
Do you think the Steelers could turn Lenny into a number two receiver?
Do I think this is that Lenny's question?
No, but given their history of finding wide receivers hiding under rocks.
Okay, realistically, who do you think is the least athletic person the Steelers could turn into a viable wide receiver?
I don't want to be mean here, because...
You're going to say me? That's fine.
Someone. What? No. Let me put it this way.
Okay.
All right. Like, who's someone on their roster? Who could turn into a number two wide receiver?
Could the Steelers turn
Stephon Tuitt into a number two?
I was thinking Chris Boswell. Is he still on the roster? He's on the roster still.
I think so, yeah. I think he is.
Like, you know how like if you play Madden, you can put a kicker in the wide receiver slot. He's going to have like a 12 rating, but you can still do it. I think that's what they need to do.
Hilariously large guys. Ben Roethlisberger. Well, catching passes from Josh Dobbs.
Exactly. That's my alarm going off.
Last question, as always, comes from Lenny. I don't know if you know, but I'm no longer reading it in his voice. I'm
Wait,
just
why not?
Relating a I don't want to get into this.
This is not
I don't want to relitigate it.
Listen, you know, I have held out for a long time on appearing regularly on the Mina Kimes show. That is, I don't ask for money. I don't ask for favors. I just want a question from Lenny. And if you ask me a question from you, I talk to you all the time.
Lenny wants to know why you've blocked all of his burners on Twitter.
Why have I blocked all of his burners on Twitter? Because Twitter pays $0 and 0 cents, and I put at least 20% of my life into it. My logic on Twitter when it comes to people is this. Like,
yes.
Like,
tell
us. I am having a conversation with someone else at a party, and you walk up, and whatever you tweet is what you're saying to me. So if I'm like, if I'm like having a conversation about like a band with someone on Twitter,
good,
and you're like, yeah, that band sucks, it's like, just go away. Like, why do you care? Just if you don't like it, just leave me alone.
Or yeah, if like, I know,
right? If you're being like a dick to someone I'm friends with, like
right?
Let me give you an example. Like if Peter King says something,
Lenny is setting you up.
Yeah, like if Peter King says something that like, like someone makes fun of, I'm gonna block you because, like, yeah. I like Peter. I think Peter King is someone I like more than I like you. So, like, I'm probably if he says something dumb or he says something smart, and you think it's dumb and you tell him it's dumb, I'm probably gonna say something dumb too, and you're probably gonna be a jerk to me too. So let me just block you now while I have
the
opportunity.
Get out of this. I love the when people get mad about blocks on Twitter. I block as well. And they say, well, it wasn't like I said anything bad. All I did was just said his opinion was stupid. Imagine going up to someone on the street, like you just said, and saying your opinion is stupid. Like, no one is entitled to being pooped on, right?
No. Like, or like wait, if someone's like, hey, like, you look bad. Like, you look, yeah. Like,
okay,
that's like, walk up to all someone right, and be like, hey, like, your haircut's gross. Or, like,
yes,
like, you dressed wrong. Like, they would punch you in the eyeball. Like, that's
yes,
ridiculous.
Yes, right. What I should have said is no one is entitled to pooping on you, not being, you know.
No one is entitled to follow me on Twitter, except for Lenny.
On that note, Lenny needs to go for a walk.